Okay, we are picking up in section 3, Jehovah's Witnesses, Succession of Leaders. We've already talked a little bit about Russell, and we won't go over that. I'll just try to give you some new sense of how this organization under these leaders sort of progress through time. It has been a progression. What you might be exposed to if you have a family of Jehovah's Witnesses showing up at your door and start talking about doctrine is different in some ways than what the organization started out with, and its character has changed over time, interestingly enough. Russell himself was married to a lady by the name of Maria Ackley, and she was also very active in the Watchtower Society. She ended up being secretary treasurer for the society and was actually an editor of the Watchtower. But after a few years of marriage, she ended up separating and then filing for divorce from Russell, so he ended up being a divorce man. It's interesting in her reasons given the grounds were just conceit, egotism, domination, and improper conduct in relation to other women. You may recall, talking about his ego, you may recall something we studied, I think the last time or time before last, where he laid out his position that searching the scriptures, the book he was, the six volumes, to be seven volumes that he was writing, were really more important to read than to have, and they would bring you life versus studying the Bible. And so he, you know, egotism is not hard to see in his life and in some of the things he taught. He was into himself pretty highly. It's claimed, at least, and these are some of the things that I just wanted to share in terms of his character. Like we saw with the Mormons, the character of Joseph Smith, it makes you wonder how in the world they ever got a following. And the same thing's true with Russell. It was claimed that they were that he was giving a number of sermons, and I gave you some comments, these allegedly 2,000 sermons given, and these were being sent out to newspapers as well. And there are people who have documented evidence to the contrary. A fellow wrote a book, actually a couple guys, wrote a book called Jehovah of the Watchtower. And they, for example, had, and I've seen the documentation that they had some documentation to the extent that the local newspaper in Honolulu, where Russell claimed to have stopped, preached a sermon, said he was in the area for an hour or so, never preached anything. And so he was, he and I don't know who else, kind of elevate him in terms of his performance and what he was doing and some of these trips he did. And he did travel a lot. He did give sermons. I'm not going to argue that point. But he also was not totally honest about what he did as well. There was an incident of something called Miracle Wheat. Russell started selling what he termed was Miracle Wheat and claimed it would give five times the yield of regular wheat. He would put this in the advertisements in his Watchtower or his publications and try to sell this stuff. And he was confronted about it and by another paper, a Brooklyn paper, and he ended up suing the paper for libel. He said it wasn't true. And he sued him for libel. Well, the government checked the wheat, and sure enough, it was like other wheat. In fact, it was a little less yield than normal wheat. So, again, he lost that suit. There was a, quote, pastor of the Baptist Church in of all places, Hamilton, Ontario, where Steve Rudd now preaches. This was back in the early 1900s. And a fellow there, a pastor there, wrote a pamphlet that publicly condemned, of course, Russell. So Russell sued for libel in that case. And in the course of the trial, it was shown that Russell was an out-and-out perjurer. One of the things they asked him to give you a sense of it was whether or not he knew the Greek alphabet. Oh, yeah, said Russell. And so he was asked to identify some Greek letters on top of a page of the Greek Testament, and unable to do so, and so he had to admit he didn't know the language. And he also claimed that he had been appointed to the clergy by some body. I don't know what body it was, and so they pressed him on that point. Of course, to the Baptists, that would be important. You see why they bring that up. And so he was pressed on that by the prosecutor in the trial, or the girl was doing the discussion, leading the discussion lawyer at that time. And he asked him point blank, had he ever been ordained by any of these recognized religious bodies? And, you know, he went through another bishop, blah, blah, blah. And he had to say no. So, you know, this is just characteristic of what we would today call a charlatan. And that's the way Russell was. He was a prolific writer. And so his influence, a lot of his influence, of course, would come out of the writings he did. And he ended up passing away while he was coming back from one of his trips, and died in 1916. He was near Papa, Texas. So he died in your state, our state. They claimed, and I don't know his credibility into this, that he traveled more than 1,000,000 miles, gave more than 30,000 sermons, and wrote over 50,000 pages in publications. So take that with a grain of salt. He was a writer, though. He was a pretty prolific writer, giving that due. Rutherford would become the second president of the JWs. Rutherford, you know, it's interesting, go back and parallel this to the Mormons. You had Joseph Smith started the Mormons, but when Brigham Young came along, he was really the one who steered the organization and probably, again, in my opinion, had the most influence over what the Mormon Church ended up being. Rutherford is similar to that. While Russell started it, Rutherford was the one that really made some of the substantial changes that carry through to today. He was born into a Baptist family, but he ended up, I'm not too sure how big of a Baptist he was, at 16, he ended up going to college to study law. And at 22, he graduated, he passed the bar exam. So he's pretty accomplished, apparently pretty accomplished, pretty smart fellow. And while he was in his secular life, when he had started work, he was a prosecutor. And then he was appointed, as a fill-in, a special judge who would periodically fill in for a judge on the bench when the judge was gone. And so this is really, that's his the extent to which he was a judge, and he was referred to throughout most of his life as Judge Rutherford. So he picked up that title based on that little bit of experience. He ended up joining the movement in 06, would go on to become the society's legal counselor. We talked about how he purchased property for them and ended up purchasing property in Brooklyn. And then following that, he would end up being their second president. Almost, and maybe actually, from the first day he started as president, he had opposition. And even to the point that it became really what amounted to an open rebellion. He immediately started reorganizing the organization and started to get them involved in a more active program of witnessing. up to this point in time, there really had been an organization that did, that focused on Bible study groups. And he moved them off that and, into, although they still had Bible study groups, but he moved them in a direction where they started going, getting more active and going out and witnessing to others, what they call witnessing. And as a result of that, there were people that pulled off. There are organizations, you may not hear of these, I haven't read up on them. There's one called the Layman's Home Missionary Movement, that broke off actually in 1909, a small group, but in 1916 or so, 17, when Rutherford took over, he had his rebellions, and more peeled off to that. Some peeled off to something called the Associated Bible Students. Some peeled off to the Free Bible Students, or Society. And so you see these other organizations that really were they were tracking what Russell was teaching more than in the style of Russell, and the emphasis of Russell, rather than wanting to stick around with Rutherford and what he was trying to do. Under Rutherford's reign, at least, they did finish up the studies in the scriptures, got the seventh volume done. That volume was primarily a book written regarding commentary of Revelation and Ezekiel. And out of that came a small pamphlet, and it was entitled The Fall of Babylon. And they started distributing that at the end of 1917. And in it, what they claim is Catholic and Protestant organizations, churches, religious organizations, form the present-day Babylon, and they would soon disappear. And so people were, needless to say, up in arms a bit. Remember, this time frame is World War I, and so there are things that are going on in terms of the world. The governments at that time, that is, depending on what the JWs were dealing out, was having other kinds of impacts, and that's true in this case. And so they got people got so upset with them, the government got involved. In this case, the government of Canada specifically, because they were active in the war at the time, and they actually forbade anybody from possessing Watchtower material. They considered it considered sedition, or at least what the material said is sedition, because they were anti-war. JWs were anti-war at this time, and still are.
What is it about that they're anti-war? What is it that they're anti-war? What, why?